LeBron James becomes the only player ever to reach 30K points, 8K rebounds, and 8K assists. Damn, dog.
And he ain't done. Nowhere near it.
Notch his 12th triple-double of the season, 29 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. Jesus Christ, dude.
Beast.
And they say, I think I saw somewhere he just reached 11th all-time. I think it was either an assist. Yeah, just cracked 11th all-time in assists. This dude might be top 10 in points. Well, he's already top 10 in points. But he might be like top 10 in points, rebounds, and assists, dude, once it's all said and done. Each of those categories.
Welcome to another edition of Dead End Sports. I'm your host, Kenneth B. Inge. Joining me on the show is BZ430 and FIFO. What's going on, fellas?
What it do?
What up?
This week, we're discussing the reaction to the FBI probe that hit the NCAA, Philly's billboard that they're using to recruit LeBron, Anthony Davis's big games, Porzingis, and much, much more. Before we kick off the show, please check out the other following shows. And I think you guys will like this. Check out the 12 Kyle podcast, former Dead End Sports host 12 Kyle. Check out his podcast. Make sure you go ahead and subscribe to Dead End Hip Hop, the YouTube channel. So check that out. Subscribe to the Is the Mic Still On podcast. And check out these other two sports podcasts, Chris Platty's Strictly Hip Hop and Strictly B-Ball Talk, and the Technical File podcast from a former guest of ours, Manny. So let's go ahead and kick things off this week. The NCAA got in a lot of hot mess, which shouldn't be surprising to a lot of people, with the FBI wiretapping, and we had wind that this was coming a while back, and now it finally hit. There's been a lot of reactions to the scandal. Sean Miller was recorded proposing to pay Ayton. What's his first name, B?
DeAndre.
Oh, you're talking about Arizona?
Yeah. Beast. $100,000. So he didn't coach, but the players get to play. Got coach players from Duke caught up in this mess. A lot of people in this mess. And today, we're recording this on Tuesday, February 27th. But LeBron said they called the NCAA corrupt. Jalen Rose said players should boycott. And Barack Obama had the most interesting comment of all. He says that the NBA should create a junior league. So, did you guys see that? And if you did, what do you guys think about Barack's proposal?
Barack be listening to Dead End Sports. I've been said that.
Yeah, I thought.
I'm just saying.
I mentioned that before some time ago. I said, I thought when I saw that Barack said, I was like, didn't FIFO say that a few months ago or some time ago?
Yeah, it was a while ago. It's not even some months, years. I've been saying that. I think that the NBA, I've said that the NBA needs to have a minor league just like baseball. So that way you can control the maturation. You can control the maturation of these players and then bring them up once they're ready. You know what I'm saying? That's the reason why I said that I believe that every single NBA team needs to own a G League team. And the G League needs to be the true minor league system, the feeder system. You know, so that way kids can bypass the NCAA. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, man. Or just start playing, paying college players. These guys, what's $100,000 for Deonte Ayton, right, versus the millions that he's going to generate for that university? Is that not fair? You know what? Keep your scholarship. Just give me the dough.
Yep, that's true. I mean, I, you know, to your point too, people, hockey, NHL, they have minor leagues. You know what I'm saying? For the kids that come out that don't want to go to college, hey, look, spend a couple of years playing this minor league, and if you're ready, we'll get you caught up, get you signed up. Same with baseball. They have two minor leagues. You got AAA and AA. So you got to really work your way up before you be ready for the majors in baseball. And I think I'm cool with NBA doing something like that. Yeah, I mean, it gives – when you're coming out 18 years old, 17, 18 years old, graduate high school, it gives you a decision. If you want to go into college, try to get an education, and play ball. Or if you want to be like, look, you know what? I'm a grown, at that point, I'm 18, I'm a grown person, I make my own decisions. I want to try to go at this pro thing and start off in the G League and work my, and try to work my way up. If that don't work,
bet on myself.
No. Huh?
And bet on yourself.
And bet on yourself. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that's a good way to, I think that's a clean way to do it. You know, because all these other sports, you got kids that's even younger going into in their profession. You know what I'm saying? Why the NBA is the only sport that you know, you have to go to college. You know what I'm saying? NFL, we understand that. There's no way, no man. You cannot be 18 years old, be ready to play grown man football. That's a different story. That's I understand football. I think we all understand that concept. But but NBA, that's the only professional that's the only major sport where you can't come out as an 18-year-old and be a professional, or younger and be a professional. Stan Van Gundy made an interesting point. He flat out said it's racist because you got a lot of young black kids, pretty much majority of that's in the sport of NBA, of basketball, that's trying to come out and make millions as youngsters. And Stan Van Gundy said, you got golfers that's 14, 15 being professional. And, you know, you got hockey players, you got baseball, that's majority white kids or that's not black, you know, or Caucasian males that's making these millions as youngins. But when it's a young black person, they can't go fresh out of high school and make millions. So Stan Van Gundy, he just flat out said it. So Stan Van Gundy had no filter at all, man. So, yeah. These guys, you should have a chance to play in the G League for development, minor league. Get a chance, like people said perfectly. Bet on yourself.
So, I mean, they've had this league since what, 2001, right? And I think there's been two players, Hassan Whiteside, Jeremy Lin, and I know there's been others that have come out of the league. Jonathan Simmons, I think he came from the G League.
Yep, it's a whole bunch of role players, Ken. It's a whole bunch of guys that add value to professional basketball teams, because everybody's not going to be a star, and you're going to need guys to go out there and fill voids on squads, and that's what you can develop in the G League. Also, what it does is it'll showcase if a guy's like super ready. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could draft him and be like, well, I'm not sure. He goes out there, he dominates a couple times. Okay, you call him up. You know what I'm saying? Like, how good would it be right now, right? And I know where you were going, where, you know, the G League was started, you said, what, back in 01? But
yeah,
still,
yeah,
not every team 17 years later has a G League team. That's still a problem.
Wow.
All 30 teams do not have a G League team. So I think it should be mandatory for they gotta change that. They gotta change that, because they gotta be college. And you know, I'm not a proponent of the one and done. I'd rather them go straight to the NBA and get the best coaching and weightlifting and training and treatment available from the youngest age possible. That's how you create a dominant culture. You know what I'm saying? We already dominate, but if you watch the world versus the U.S. and the young game, right, like the youngster game, the up-and-coming game, the world dominated. The world is catching up. The difference is that there's no one particular country as dominant as the U.S., but you take the rest of the world versus the U.S., I would say that the world is better than us at this point in terms of young talent, in terms of young talent. So what are we doing as a nation to preserve that we are by far the most dominant basketball country? We got to get them in younger. You know, there's certain countries like Cuba where they make sports part of your school, and they develop you like you can tell, you know, okay, this kid might be good at football, baseball. All right, we're going to push him here. And then, or they might just develop him for one particular sport from a very young age. So that way, by
Tony Parker is a perfect example, because he was playing professional ball
since 14.
Yeah, since 14 years old in France. He was playing professional ball in France at 14.
Ricky Rubio, Sergio Rodriguez, a lot of those European guys, you know, Luka Doncic. The high draft pick coming out this year. You know what I'm saying? These guys play Nikolai Mirotic. You know what I'm saying? These guys play professional basketball from a very young age, and that's good for them playing against mature men. So that way, when they make the jump to the NBA, it's not that big of a shock. It's like, oh, okay, I just gotta take it a half step up, or maybe just one level up. You know what I'm saying? Versus, holy crap, what is this? What did I get myself into? Because oftentimes we see these rookies deer in a headlight look. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes they're not ready and sometimes they are. But it's more often than not that they're not ready. But like I've been saying for years on this program, the talent is coming and we see it. And it's more ready than ever. So imagine if the NBA, instead of these AAU coaches, right, in high school, can get their hands on kids at 10, 11 and start developing them from that age. Bro, like, come on. I just think it only makes sense. It only makes sense to me.
You know, I think one of the concerns that I think that, you know, I've heard a lot of different reactions to this. And for me, the way I look at it, right, is that if they do create this league, look, it ain't for everybody. It's only going to be the best of the best. So you still will be able to get talent for college, but you'll have talent that will develop in college to become an NBA player. So you'll have a chance, the NCAA will have a chance to brand a player and to build their business around a player that wasn't NBA talent right off the bat, like in 18 or 19. But over 2 or 3 years, you'll see him morph into that guy, like maybe somebody like Buddy Hield. I think
was the Laker guy? Was the Laker rookie, Doug?
Kuzma. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you'll still find NBA players in the NCAA, but they'll have something a little bit – because, you know, if these guys stay in there for a year or so, we watch them play sometimes or maybe just only in the tournament, and we don't really get a chance to see what or who they are. So I think it can work both ways. So only the best can go, and we'll let your talent dictate who gets a shot. And then if you can't make it, hey, maybe you can go to back to college and play there and develop. But it's not going to be for everybody. Because I think one of the things that I kept hearing is that, oh, only 13 players from college or whatever the number they were throwing out make it to the NBA. And that's fine. Those guys can play in the G League, and everybody else can play in college. So it works for both players. And the thing that I want to know, and the thing that I've been waiting for, is Adam Silver, because I haven't seen him say anything in response to it, because the league, the rule, the one and done is his rule. So as progressive as they are, will they make a change on this? Because we've seen successful high school players develop into elite talent and stars. And as with anything, not all high school players are built for that. So the market and your talent will determine whether or not you turn into a guy. And that's just it. I don't know, man. I'm curious to see if they're going to see what Adam Silver's going to do, because he's been really quiet, so I'm sure he's talking to his people, and maybe he'll reverse the rule. I don't know. One of the things that happened Monday, was it Monday or was it Sunday? I'm talking about Zsa Zsa Pachulia. I think it was Sunday. The Warriors, Thunder, they were playing, and by now most of you guys have seen it. Russell Westbrook drives to the hoop, goes up for a layup. Swaggy P comes from behind, contests the shot. Swaggy P falls down. Zsa Zsa Pachulia catches himself, take a few steps forward, look, sees Russell Westbrook on the ground, and somehow falls down. There's been a lot of talk about what happened and whether or not Zsa Zsa is the dirty player. And the NBA came out and they didn't suspend him at all. Now, I will say that you can see contact from Swaggy P's leg on the back of Zsa Zsa's leg. And I think because that was there, that may have led to them not suspending him. But I guess what I want to start out with is, do you guys think that was a dirty play?
Looking from the angles, did he like intentionally fell? Because I couldn't tell if he like intentionally fell on his knee or just like fell on his leg or.
B, that man dirty, well, man.
No, I mean I couldn't because like when he fell down, I didn't see him like intentionally like go for a part of his body.
He didn't necessarily like say, oh, look at the knee, I'm gonna go put an elbow on the knee, but right. He saw Russ and he put his whole body on his lower extremity. That's dirt. There was no contact between him and Swaggy P that made him fall down like that.
I mean, right.
Come on, man.
It looked like it was kind of like some acting going on the way he fell down. But I think for me, people, I was just looking at, like you said, like he didn't intentionally like go. Like it'd have been different. He was just like, oh, I'm putting all this pressure on his knee or ankle or whatever. I didn't see that, so I was just like,
the fall was intentional. He didn't have to fall, and it made fall.
That's true. That's true. And like I said, I mean, I agree with you. I just think when I was looking at it, I'm like, well, he didn't intentionally like try to, you know, cause we've seen players intentionally try to hit certain areas where you be like, okay, you either know that guy is injured or you know it's the potential of him getting seriously injured. So with that fall, you're right, FIFO. It was intentionally like just the way he fell on his body. He didn't have to. Swaggy P did not. Nick Young did not put that much. He didn't hit him that hard or push him that hard for him to fall down, you know, like exactly. That on Russell. But I was just looking at it from, okay, what was he trying to actually fall on? Because I didn't see it. So that was just my dissecting of that video. So
I feel you. The thing he was trying to fall on was Russell Westbrook at anywhere. Think about it, man. You take Russell Westbrook out. That team is completely like that's barely a playoff team in the West.
Right. Let's be honest. I think with superstars, you gotta kind of lay some type of law down. I mean, you know, not to say like, you know, either player, you know, another type of player don't matter, but like if it's a marquee player that people come to see rather than on TV or live, it should have been some type of punishment for Zaza. Like,
you know, of course, 1000%. Look, yep. Like, I don't know if it should have been a suspension or a fine. You know, they don't pay me the type of money to make those decisions. But at the end of the day, look, the NBA is an open market, right? There's a value set. Don't nobody pay to go see no Zaza Pachulia. Right. People pay to go see Russell Westbrook, which is the reason why this man has a $200 million contract. Yep. That's his value. So when you intentionally try to harm somebody that's worth value like that, I think that you should not even have to think twice about making a statement. And especially when Zaza has been involved in many occurrences. The one against Kawhi Leonard last year in the playoffs, that one was kind of whatever. Like that was very on the border. But this right here, this was very, very much so intentional. Hell no. And then you see Russ's face after that. He's like, really? You're not going to do nothing?
Yeah, he was looking like, really? Like, you really just fought out on me like that? Like, really? Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah, you know, when I was watching the game, man, and when I saw the replay, as soon as I saw it, I was like, I'm just fed up with Zaza. Like, I knew it was intentional. And then, you know, I was wondering how they were going to spin it. And, of course, the Swaggy P making legs. You're right, man. There's no way he's going to make Zaza, 6'11 Zaza, fall down by tapping the back of his leg. So I definitely think he's a dirty player. He has a history of that. And I don't know why we're so reluctant to call him that. Like, people are reluctant to call him what he is. Like, they were quick to call Deli that. And then other people are saying, you know, we had Bill Laimbeer doing similar things back in the day. But for me, and while that's true, but they've done a good job of trying to get that out of the league. And here is a guy that's doing similar things as deliberately hurting stars. So they got to get that out, man. And I figured they wasn't going to suspend him, but I think the league has to be careful here because retaliation is coming. Somebody is going to get him, and it's just a matter of time. So Yeah, I definitely thought it was a dirty play when I saw it. So, yeah, that's crazy, man. There was something you said, FIFO, and I didn't have this written down, but it just caught my attention when you said it. So you really think without Russell Westbrook, OKC with Paul George and Carmelo Anthony isn't a playoff team in the West?
I said they're barely. 7 seed now.
Yeah. Hmm. So, nah. They're barely a playoff team. Barely. In the West.
I don't know, man. I think, well, it depends on who the point guard would be, but I don't know, man. Paul George is that dude, so I don't know. I think maybe there'll be I didn't know they were 7 seed.
They are 7 seed right now, dude. They're like a game and a half ahead of the 8 seed. I think it was the Denver Nuggets.
Losing Roberson hurt them a lot more than people would like to admit, because they haven't been the same since he went down. But anyway, yeah. So one other thing that I have here, and I don't think it was on the list of notes, LeBron and the calling out the referees and saying that he hasn't been receiving the number of calls that he should have. Following that game on Sunday against the Spurs, Paul George said the same thing. He said that he doesn't get calls and Russell Westbrook don't get calls. And this isn't the first time. And LeBron went on basically said that they protect the shooter. Why do you guys think this is? Why do you guys think that Paul George, Westbrook, and LeBron are not being rewarded for attacking the basket when typically guys that attack the basket are rewarded more?
I think first and foremost, too many guys in the NBA complain. And I think that, you know, refs are obviously human. And when you complain, I'm going to be less likely to give you that next call unless it was very valid and I missed it. Then, you know what? I'm going to overcompensate. And if they even breathe on you the heart like the wrong way, I'm going to call this call for you because I'd have messed up on the last one. So I get that there's a human component to it. But I just think that, you know, when I watch basketball now, I just think it needs to be a little bit more physical. So that way, and I think the game needs to be called more consistent. There's games I watch where they let a lot of contact go, right? And then there's games I watch where you touch them and it's a foul. And I don't think that the players know game to game what they're going to get. And I think that's very hard to play basketball at a high level when you don't understand or have a feel for how the game is going to be officiated. And I think more so than getting the calls, it's more so being consistent with how you're going to call the game. And I think once the refs figure that out, and I think that's the reason why I'm saying that you have to allow a little bit more of physicality. So that way the refs have a little bit more leeway if they do decide to swallow the whistle. So that's how I feel about that. I think they're just coming from a player perspective. Obviously, I never played in the NBA, so I don't know how it feels. But just outside looking in, that's my perspective on the situation.
You know, I think he has a valid point, though. And I think all of the guys that attack the basket do like. And to one of your points about the physicality in the NBA, it does need to be more physical. But it also needs to go both ways, because the inconsistency that you spoke of is what I see in a game. A player go to the hoop, they'll get beat up, and there'll be no call. But then a player would get touched or swiped at, you know, on the perimeter taking a jump shot, and it's a call, and they're barely touched. Or, you know, they may make a flailing gesture into making the referees think, and I get that you're selling it, but there are a lot of calls on the perimeter where when they drive to the paint and they get the same type of contact, it's not a foul. But out on the perimeter, when you have that same amount of contact, it's a foul. So for me, that's where the inconsistencies lie, and I would like to see them clean that up, because I can understand being frustrated. B, you know, you bad boys, Pistons, man. So what do you think about this? Because they changed the rules after Detroit beat the hell out of Michael Jordan for all of those years and he complained. So so you think LeBron, Westbrook, and Paul George, do you think they got a gripe?
No, I mean, we've seen players complain about, you know, them not getting calls for everywhere, going from Shaq to Ivo to Kobe. So, I mean, like, LeBron and Westbrook and them, the superstars complaining is not anything new. I don't know, man. I'm kind of with FIFA, man. I think the game needs to be a little bit more physical. I mean, you know, of course, not saying it needs to go back to 1987 physical, mm-hmm. but, you know, it needs to get a little more physical. And if you're not going to, you know, call it, you know, just make sure it's even on both ends. You know, don't just make it lopsided where you know, LeBron James shoots 17 free throws and then Paul George only shooting two, or James Harden only shooting two. You know, like, just call it consistent. But I just think dudes need to get a little bit more physical. I mean, some of the fouls is not really affecting LeBron James going to the rack. It's like you can still make that shot. You can still play through it. Yeah, you might get tapped on the wrist or whatever, or you might get a little slapped on your arm. Dude, you 6'8", 270. You know, so it shouldn't be that much issue. It'd be different if dudes was out there trying to clothesline you or undercut you and literally bump you out of the lane with their, you know, with their hips and stuff. And no cause, but you know, for the ticky tack stuff, it's like, all right, when you're penetrating, going to the basket, you're gonna get contact. I mean, regardless if you like it or not, you're gonna get some contact. So you shouldn't really, every time you go to the hole and get some contact, and the ref don't call it, you shouldn't be complaining every single time. It's like, dude, it's not easy. It's not gonna be easy going to the bucket. So you might as well just brace for impact and then just get the contact and try to fight through it and get the N1. If the ref call it, cool. If they don't, get back on defense.
And you know what I believe too, before we move on, is the right to defensive space, right? Because as an offensive player, you initiate and create contact. As a defensive player, am I supposed to just continue to allow you the space without holding my ground? I feel that I should have the right to stand my, if you initiate contact and I not push you back, but use my own manly force to resist your contact, that should not be a foul. That should not, I should have the right to this defensive space. And that's what I mean by being more physical. Not, and this whole flopping thing, if I see somebody flail off of that, I'm not even calling that. I'm letting that play on. You need to understand that the defensive player has a right to resist your contact creation. Yeah. That's only what's fair in basketball. Because if you're initiating on a contact, I'm always at a disadvantage. Always. That's not fair. How sometimes, right, like what before we got on the show, I was talking to B about Larry Bird and how he was the first player I saw that used IQ to overcome his physical limitations. And sometimes somebody may be stronger than somebody that's quicker, and you have to use that strength to nullify that quickness. And I feel in the NBA, they don't allow that. Like, Ron Artest couldn't play and be the guy he was in this NBA. And that's not fair, because Ron Artest was an all-star and an all-first-team NBA defender, one of the greatest defenders to play in the game. Maybe a couple screws loose, which kind of held him back. But let's be honest, at his prime, he could lock the best of them down and get in people's head. But in this NBA, he couldn't do what he did. He was a bully. And I feel that the NBA should allow the rules to have bullies. I think the closest thing that we see to that is Draymond. He gets away with a lot of contact defensively. But that's not consistent. I think that needs to be consistent throughout the NBA.
And he gets away with a lot of complaining to the referees, too.
He does.
My God.
He does. Man. But, you know, you earn that right, though. You know, the higher you get and the more value you are, like, that's what he's known for now, right? So the refs will give him more leeway versus who's the new big white boy for the Cleveland Cavs, the point guard, Jetty?
Yeah, Jetty.
Yeah, Jetty. You're like, Jetty can't do that. As soon as he raises his voice, boom, tank. Oh, what? You complain again? Boom, you out the game. But of course Draymond's going to get away with stuff like that, man.
They scared of Draymond.
They are.
But anyway, the talk of the week, I guess, to kick things off this week was Anthony Davis, who went off for 53 points, 18 rebounds, 5 blocks, 3 assists. The man was a flat-out monster. And I think it's funny – that that this happened, because I recall FIFO jumping on me a couple of shows ago when I said, I guess, a disrespectful comment about Anthony Davis. Oh, I said Anthony Davis is going to have to come back, and FIFO was like, Anthony Davis been back. The Pelicans are 6-0, and during this win streak, Anthony Davis is averaging 41 points, 15 rebounds, 3.2 steals, and 3.2 blocks. That was his fifth 40-point, 10-rebound game in February, according to ESPN Stats and Info, and it's the most in a single calendar month in the past 35 seasons. The only player to put up 50, 15, and 5 was Bob McAdoo. And that was back in when they started tracking stats of 73 to 74. It's interesting how sports works and how sports media work. A couple of years ago, Anthony Davis was the talk of the town. The league marketed him. They were going to push him. He was the next best thing. A couple of injuries happened. He fall off the face of the earth. Nobody talking about him like that. And now seemingly he's back, like said a couple of weeks ago. And everybody want to talk about him.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I don't know what you've been talking about, man. Anthony Davis been here all season. Him and DeMarcus. I've been watching the Pelicans. Look, man. The narrative. You can't believe the narrative that you hear on national media, man. These guys. I'm not gonna say that they paid, but they swayed. They sway with the wind, man. And me, I'm steadfast. I tell you guys exactly what I see. And what I saw with DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis is the best twin towers that I've seen, because they're the most skillful twin towers ever. And these guys do complement each other. And I think that they should be playing together. And I think that that organization needs to figure it out. Because when these guys were playing together, they both were averaging 20-10. So we know that Anthony Davis can put up numbers like this. So if DeMarcus goes down, and I think it was a very class act by him rocking DeMarcus Cousins' jersey during the All-Star game, bigging up the homie. But when he's by himself and he knows he has that pressure on him, he's performed. The only thing that's held him back in his career is the injuries. You know, and that's not something he can control. All he can control is when he's healthy and playing at his best, putting up numbers like that. And that's why B was very early on him. I know I was a bit skeptical. Yeah. I saw it, but I just needed him to put it together. And he's done that, you know, and when healthy, really, it's hard to name a better player than him. Go ahead.
No, you know what I like about it, man? It is mm-hmm. I like the fact that all of this is translating into wins. And,
of course.
And that's the big thing for me. Now, can he keep it up? And, you know, like people say, he's doing it in the West. But can he keep it up? That remains to be seen. It's like probably 20-some games he has left. And everything's on his shoulders to get this team, you know, to the playoffs. So, for me, man, I think it's going to be dope to kind of watch and see him, like, put it all together to the point where, you know, he's carrying this team, you know, into the playoffs, and maybe he can eke out. Because I didn't know this. They were actually a third seed, which is crazy considering how they've been middle of the road for most of the season, like tiddling right around 500. What do you think about, like, people are saying MVP talk? Does he deserve that?
No.
What's holding him back? The record?
Yeah, the record. To me, obviously, the impact that he has on the squad, on the NBA, is immense when healthy. But to me, an MVP has to be fifth or higher. And the reason why I say fifth is because what if that team had an injury and it kind of held them, like it pushed them down, but that star player still rose above all of that. Like, that can happen. So I think that's a situation. But the record has to be there. And they're not that high. So that's the only thing holding them back.
But they're two games behind the Spurs, four games behind Minnesota that just lost Jimmy Butler. They're fifth seed now, so I misspoke. But they're in range of being a third seed depending on what happens from here. So that kind of falls within your criteria. Now, we all know that more than likely is going to be James Harden. But is he worth at least being part of the conversation?
When you ball out of control like that, of course. And I think he's one of those perennial MVP kind of guys, right? If he's healthy, every year he should be in the conversation, every single year, because he's going to put up these ridiculous numbers. It's like LeBron, right? Like, LeBron's in his 15th season. He's still a top three MVP candidate, is he not? I think that's the type of run Anthony Davis is going to be on.
Yeah, and he just averaged a triple double for the month of February. That's official. So what about you, B man? You think Anthony Davis should be in the MVP discussions if he finishes third in the West or higher? He's probably not going to get higher, but say third.
Yeah, if he hit fourth or third, without, you know, your other Twin Tower, as people mentioned, your other Twin Tower bro with you, if you can carry your team to that level in the West, to that high of a seed, oh yeah, you definitely, and then you still putting up those type of numbers that he's putting up, oh yeah, most definitely be a discussion for MVP. Especially takes his team up to 3 seed, that'd be nuts, dude. That'd be crazy. What you about to say, people?
Oh, no. I was agreeing with you.
I mean, because you got to figure, like, you know, the Spurs is up there. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you surpass the Spurs and getting a 3 seed, you know, in the West. Yeah, he's definitely, I would say, hands down, he got to be in that. He should win. I'm just saying, he should definitely be in that conversation for MVP talk if he can will his team to that. That's like hands down, because I already knew Anthony Davis was capable of doing this type of work. I already saw this coming from years and years ago in his days in Kentucky. So I was like, man. So I'm glad he's living up to that potential. Now, we don't get injured. I hope nothing happens where, you know, we've seen there's been an injury plague season so far, and I hope, you know, nothing happens to this dude within the next month where he gets injured, because it was very unfortunate for DeMarcus Cousins to get injured. I think you definitely, he definitely got to be an MVP talk, man. Like, you know, yeah, 5, 4, 5, 5, it'd be a little kind of tight, but 3, definitely. I don't see why he wouldn't be in the conversation for MVP. If he can will his team up to a 3 seed.
Okay. Yeah, I think we'll
have okay, I'm done.
Okay. So I think I agree, man. To kind of, if you finish third and you're basically carrying this team without DeMarcus Cousins and you turn your performances into wins. Yeah, you deserve to be in the discussion. You deserve to get some votes. Speaking of LeBron, I know I mentioned earlier he averaged a triple-double for the month of February. There's a team in the East that's actively recruiting LeBron, and I'm sure you guys saw this, but this was crazy. Like, this took balls, man, to actually buy billboards outside of Cleveland to recruit LeBron. This is crazy. It's nuts.
Here's the thing. It cannot be the Philadelphia 76ers, because obviously that's tampering. So it's an independent company that took out these ads. So let's clarify that, so that way people don't think it's actually the Philadelphia 76ers. But no, Ken, to your point, 1,000%, you have to have balls to do it, regardless if it's Philly themselves or a company or whatever, right? Like, but here's the thing. I feel them, right? Like, I've said that I would like to see LeBron go play for an iconic coach, because that's the one thing he has not had in his entire career. And I think that adds to his legacy, whether he does or he doesn't. But if we're looking just from a strictly talent perspective, right, Philly's only paying one guy, which is Joel Embiid next year. And they're paying Robert Covington, right? And obviously Robert Covington is on a very team-friendly contract. J.J. Redick comes off the books. Ben Simmons is still on the rookie deal. The rest of that, I think Dario Saric is still on the rookie deal. So the rest of that squad is still very young, but very talented. And we see right now what LeBron can do with a very young, but very talented type of team. If I'm Bron and I truly do not feel any loyalty toward Cleveland, 100% go to Philly. If he wants to play with talent, I don't think that he'll fall. Obviously, he can go to Golden State, but I think that diminishes his career, so we won't even entertain that. But if he goes to Philly and is able to propel that organization and that franchise and truly pass, hand over, you know what I'm saying, the knowledge, not necessarily the game or the keys to the franchise and into the squad, to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, but hand over and pass that knowledge, that secret sauce that Kyrie Irving is playing with this season. If he can pass that to those guys and expedite their maturation as NBA superstars, because NBA future Hall of Famers, if they stay healthy, the both of those guys are, that's going to be an extremely scary situation. Because Robert Covington can shoot the crap out the ball. Dario Saric is a stretch four. And you have Ben Simmons as your point guard and LeBron your pseudo point guard. I'm talking about that is a very big athletic team that you are putting out there. If I'm LeBron, I strongly have to consider that. And obviously, Rich Paul represents Ben Simmons and LeBron. So obviously, there's a connection there. If people don't know, LeBron and Ben are kind of a protege and mentor kind of relationship. So bringing that onto the team as well, that's just a really good situation. I don't think you could paint a more perfect scenario for LeBron to come in and truly mentor the young Hall of Famers that they have right now. I think that'll be tremendous.
You know,
hey FIFA, would that work though? Yeah. FIFA, by Bron and Simmons being the same, like pretty much prototype players.
I think, you know, as you get older, I've always said, as you get older, you have to change your game, right? Because LeBron is obviously the he's the exception to the rule, right? Like, he's in his 15th season, and this guy athletically is still on par with the best athletes in the NBA. But eventually, Father Time is undefeated, and he's not going to be able to physically dominate the game in the way he does. So he's going to have to change his game. And I think that LeBron would slightly but gradually give up those ball handling responsibilities. And I think that he could be a scorer, right? Like, LeBron has been a reluctant scorer, but I think that he's never played with a guy like Ben Simmons, a guy kind of like him that can do things like him. I don't think he's ever played with that. So I think that would be an adjustment for LeBron. And I think that LeBron wants to elevate guys. And I think that for Ben Simmons to elevate, right? Like, for Kyrie to elevate, Kyrie got to go get bucket. That's his game. But for Ben Simmons to elevate, it's kind of, he controls the game as well. So can it work? Yes. Will it work? I don't know. But Brett Brown comes from the Popovich tree. So if anybody can devise a system or get buy-in, I think Brett Brown can do that.
You know why I like the move? Because it extends LeBron's career.
1,000.
So I think it would be a good move for him, for, you know, the twilight of his career. But yeah, I was with B. Like, how would that fit with LeBron being,
man, your
so
boy
ball
Wade
dominant?
Your boy Wade, this man still clutch. He can't retire next year. So let me break down the game just a little bit. It was about 20 seconds left in the game. D Wade with the ball, left side of the court. You know, dribble, 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 pick and roll, him and Hassan, step back, jumper in Ben Simmons' face, up by one with 5 seconds to go in the game. You know how it is, Wade County, man. This is crazy.
Hey, man.
Still got it.
Oh, man.
Third
that's
best shooting guard to play.
Hey, yeah.
Third
yeah.
best.
Yep. Back to LeBron and Philly. Do you think, because I know when we talked about Kevin, the whole Andrew Wiggins, LeBron, Kevin Love, and whether or not he should keep that talent on the team or bring in, you know, a veteran like Kevin Love. And one of the things that you commented on, FIFO, was you saying that it would suppress Andrew Wiggins' development. So with LeBron coming to Philly, would that happen to Embiid and Simmons?
No. And the reason why I don't believe it would happen is because Embiid and Simmons are levels ahead of where Andrew Wiggins is right now. And Wiggins has been in the league for a little bit. Obviously, and that's no slight to Andrew Wiggins, because he's definitely a tremendous player. And this year, he's taken his game to another level. He has gotten better every year. But where the starting points for those three players, two out of the three was just immensely higher. You know what I'm saying? Look at what Joel. Come on, man. Joel Embiid played all of 30 games, and they paid this man damn near $200 million for 30 games. That tells you something. They wouldn't pay Wiggins that type. The contract Wiggins got right now, if he paid 30 games, they wouldn't have paid him that. I guarantee you that. But Joel Embiid is something different. We ain't never seen that. And Ben Simmons is the second coming, basketball-wise, IQ-wise, similarity-wise, to me, to LeBron. And I think LeBron, like the same way LeBron was a combination to me of Magic and Michael, Ben Simmons is a combination of Magic and Bron to me, you know. So I think it'll work. I think they can make it work. I don't know if it works right off the bat, but I don't think it'll stunt their growth, man. Those guys are too great. Like Embiid, what big man can guard Embiid 1-on-1 in the NBA?
I don't know any right now. Maybe Anthony Davis.
Joel too big for him. Joel's just physically too big for him. Now, I'm not saying Anthony Davis can't guard him at all. Of course he can guard him. But all I'm saying is if you give that man 10 straight possessions, I'll put my money on Joel Embiid winning more of those possessions. You know what I'm saying? I don't think DeMarcus is quick enough. I think he's physical enough. He's not quick enough. Hassan is not quick enough. He's just a mismatched night. There's no big man right now better than Joel Embiid. There's no big. You can't argue that to me right now. He's the best big man in the game. Well, maybe Cat can guard him, but nah, I take that back.
Cat don't play defense like that. Yeah,
nah, he don't.
He's gotten better under Tibbs, but he's definitely had to work on it. He's definitely more of an offensive player. But he's a beast though. But last question about this for you guys. So, title contenders, if he goes there?
Of course. Wherever LeBron goes, there's title
contenders. Any team with LeBron on it, they has pretty much been title contenders for the last 7-8 years. So
no.
Any team.
Well, not necessarily.
Let's change the question. Think about it, Ken. Obviously, if he goes to Sacramento, they're not title contenders. So let's not get too carried away, right? But let's just say that the top 14 teams, right, or 16 teams, which is the playoff teams, and I would say about maybe five teams under that. So I would say the top 23 teams, 20 to 23 teams, you add LeBron, they're title contender.
But I guess you're right. Let's change the question. Would they be able to beat the Warriors? Like, we've seen, and that's why I said not necessarily, because we've seen LeBron be able to get to the finals, but we look at the Warriors, we look at LeBron's team, and we're like, yeah, nah, they're not going to beat them. In Philly, though, would his odds improve?
Yes, the odds improve. Because I think that you can play a different game. I think you can slow it down against Golden State with that squad. And I also think that you can run off turnovers and long rebounds, because obviously they shoot a ton of threes. They don't always make them. They go through lulls where they miss. So I think that if you can control the pace, which is extremely difficult to do against the Golden State, no easy task. But if you can control the pace and go at them strategically, like, you can't get up and down, but if you go at them strategically when you have those opportunities and capitalize, I think that they can beat the Warriors. They can, but I'm not putting my money on them. You know, if I had to put money up, hell no, I ain't picking the damn Philly with Bron. I'm still picking Golden State.
What about you, B?
Golden State, man, they still ahead above the rest right now, man. I think putting LeBron on that squad don't automatically, I'm not circling them to beat Golden State in the 7-game series, man. I'm still, until I see that armor get broke with Golden State, they look like they gonna win this year, repeat, and possibly three-peat next year. So Golden State.
I don't know, man. I think OKC gonna pop them boys.
They all
It's gonna happen, man. It's gonna happen. OKC just had a bad game.
No, man, stop.
Look, Ken. You know what is gonna
same
come
guy
down
that
to?
That's believing in Toronto this year.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Look, the problem with OKC is late game execution. I do not trust and believe in their late-game execution for two reasons. Number one, Billy Donovan. He just has not shown a propensity to galvanize that team and maximize everything. Obviously, you know, what he's been there, 2 years now, right? Two going on three?
Yeah, I think about three now.
Three, right? So the team is completely changing. He had KD 1 year. He had Oladipo the next year. Now he has Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. That's extremely difficult. I'm not giving him a pass. I understand. But at the end of the day, he's a problem. And I think Russell Westbrook, as much as I love him, end of game situations, he's erratic. He's not always consistent. He doesn't always get the best shot possible. And I think that's the reason why losing James Harden, picking Ibaka over James Harden, eventually doomed OKC, because James Harden with Russell Westbrook and KD making the decisions, it's much, you can execute what you want better through James Harden than you can Russell Westbrook. And I think that's always going to be their Achilles heel, unless Russ can play for a Pop or an iconic coach like that can put him in a better situation versus just allowing him to just be Russ.
I don't know, man. It looks like when I think back to that game and I was watching that game, I'm like, man, Paul George just can't hit a shot. But what happens when he is hitting those shots that he missed? I agree with you, in late game situations, Russ would definitely be a lot more erratic. And you know, maybe Melo would be best suited for that. But he's not involved enough offensively, I feel, to be in enough of a rhythm late, but when you got it, you got it. But I think if they get a chance to come out, be physical, get a head start, continue to play the defense they've played all year long, I think they got a shot. And I think when I think about that game, Golden State got hot. They responded better to the adversity, to the tense moments, mm-hmm. than OKC did. And that's what happened. Like, Melo complaining, rightfully so, he did get hit, but come on, bro. So, you know, Golden State was just ready, and they were more mentally tough that game than OKC was. And maybe after beating them twice, you know, you don't have that same desire to beat them that you did the first two times. So, but look, we'll know in the playoffs. So we'll see if they get a chance to meet. Two more, and then we'll get out of here, unless you guys have anything. Porzingis, man. I saw this earlier today, and I thought it was interesting. So the Knicks got a chance to lock up Porzingis for $157 million by extending him. And we've all seen the potential that Porzingis has as a player. But, man, that injury is serious. The ACL tear is serious. So, do you want to risk giving him that money? Or do you want to go back into the market and try to find you another guy? Because we all know guys are really hard to come by. So, I guess, for me, the question to you guys is whether or not you would invest in a guy that so far has been injury-prone and now is coming off an ACL tear. Is he worth locking up for $157 million and 5 years?
1,000%. No hesitation. Put really? The contract together. Yes. Because, look, how many – what is he, 7'3"? How many 7'3 guys?
7'3"?
Yeah. 7'3", dog. Like, how many 7'3 guys you seen do what he does? Right? Look. A lot of young players get injured. Technology is where it's at. An ACL tear, yes, it is a very serious injury, but we have shown the success rate of that, right? Like, the success rate is pretty high if you follow the regimen, right? Now, obviously, derails certain other players. There is a certain percentage that do not go the way according to plan. But even if he's not what he once was athletically, that don't mean the IQ goes anywhere. That doesn't mean that the touch goes anywhere. That doesn't mean that he's not 7'3". That doesn't mean he can't shoot the rock. Ilgauskas had a long NBA career. And he was very injury prone because he was very skillful. And at the end of the day, Porzingis is skillful. And skillful players do not have to be athletic. And I lock him up because he's still 7'3". Like, you can't teach 7'3", Ken.
The injury is a little scary, but if I'm the Knicks, it seemed like the fan base seemed to take well with Porzingis. He fills the seats up in Madison Square Garden. So, you know, from a business standpoint, I wouldn't mind locking someone with that talent, that size. He's pretty much a 7'3" version and a more defensively version of Dirk Nowitzki. You know, if he reaches full potential. I have no issue. I have no issue with Knicks taking a gamble on that, man, on that talent. You know, it's just because, like I said, right now he's filling up those seats in Madison Square Garden, you know, especially once he come back from injury. You know, the Knicks fan, and we know how harsh these NY fans can be, NYC fans can be. They seem to like him. So guess what? I don't want to make my fan base upset and let him walk or try to sign somebody else. Then you got my fans mad or whatever. So I want to keep those seats filled up with Porzingis fans. So I'll take the chance on that talent, on someone with that size, man, that can do what he can do offensively and defensively. And he can shoot the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And he blocks shots. I would probably do it reluctantly. I would love to see what he does next year. I would be concerned with him possibly. Well, I think Jabari was a unique situation for him to have the same injury on the other leg. But the unicorns, and I love him. 3-6 Latvia, man. Y'all go listen to the old shows, during his rookie year. But he can't stay on the court. It seems like every little nick and knack, he's out for 2 or 3 weeks. And now you have and that was for a small injury, minor injuries. And now you have an ACL tear. And, yeah, we've advanced a lot, medically. So you can definitely come back and recover from those where you haven't before in the past. But that would concern me. Having all that money invested in a guy that I may not get the return back on. But to your point, B, about them showing up, number one, well, one thing is they'll show up regardless. But I think what Porzingis does is he gives them hope. Hope that the Knicks haven't had in a long time. Hope.
Since Huey.
Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, we're talking about a pick that nobody even liked. Until they saw the kid can play. And then we saw what they did with the pick they had last year. They got this kid, Nicolina, who is proven to be, well, we don't know.
No, that was this year.
That was this year. Yeah.
And, yeah, because they could have took Dennis Smith Jr., and they didn't.
Right. Now, when they picked Kristaps, we were like, what the hell are you doing? So we kind of gave him – some people gave him them the benefit of the doubt with this pick. But, nah, when you see what Dennis is doing up in Dallas, you see what Donovan Mitchell is doing, because I think he was a pick after that one too, you got to question what they were doing. But, nevertheless, because of his ability, his rare ability, his skill set, his height, I would give it to him reluctantly, but I just will hope that – he stay healthy and we can build the right team around him. And that, I think even him, man, he has to learn he has to get his conditioning down too, because he'll come out like he had a great first month. And then he got tired and fatigued. And then he's complaining or whining about the season's a long season and he hasn't adjusted. You've been in the league long enough to know what an 82-game season is like. So he has some things to do himself. But yeah, I'll probably give him the money. But I have an out somehow, some way. But last thing, man, and I didn't know about this until today, actually. No, I think I may have seen the headline. But I didn't pay too much attention to it. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it. But the Cavaliers banned a fan from the arena indefinitely. I think they said they're going to revisit it next year. And, I mean, I don't know exactly what that means. But I think the thing that caught me about this is because it seems like we're seeing more and more of these situations happen in the NBA. And I don't know if it's that is being reported more now and that has always happened. I'm pretty sure there have been incidents. It just wasn't reported. But it just feels like a lot of this is happening more and more. And I don't know if the league or the teams are just trying to be more what's the word? Now I'm looking for the word. It's not aggressive, proactive in these type of situations. But it also feels like it's the Trump bump, right? That, you know, he's in office and these people feel like they have the right to say the things that they said. So he said, "Hey, Jamaican dog, they want their bobsledder back," the fan yelled at Mills. "Hey, Mills, Jamaica just called. They want their bobsledder back." Like, it's just such a whack. First of all, it's such a whack insult. But that's all he said. I mean, Jamaican dog is pretty rough. Like, I don't, you know. But Patty Mills said that he's used to it. You know, being an Islander and coming over here, he's kind of used to it by now, which is sad. It's kind of like we're accustomed to certain things, but... but yeah, that's what he said, and they banned him, so they're gonna revisit it next year. So I don't know. Do you guys think that was enough?
No, I don't. I thought it was maybe too hard. I thought he said something, you know, a little worse than that. Not to disrespect the, you know, Islanders and folks that's from the island, and maybe that's something, you know, that's really bad coming from there. I'm not from there, so I can't really speak on, you know, being from the islands or whatever, if that's really super offensive. I mean, yeah, it's bad. I don't know. I mean, I'm just coming from a different perspective. I didn't see it being that bad for you ban that fan for life. You know, I mean, not for life, but for a year, and then you come back revisit it. I think that's, you know, I think Adam Silver is, you know, trying to be, you know, proactive, I guess, or reactive in this situation, but I don't know. But now that you said what he said, Ken, I didn't look at it as being that bad to where you like, all right, you ain't coming back for a year. Maybe what's the? I guess this point of the season is, I mean, what you got, like, what, 25 more games left? So, I mean, he's banned for the remaining 25 games of the season and possibly can't go to the playoffs. So, I mean, I guess 25 games. It's not like he said this in November. So now if he said this in November, if he said this in like in November and you banned him for the season, I think that'd have been too harsh for what he said. But I don't know. I mean, I guess it's cool. 20, you know, he ain't gonna be able to make the remainder of the regular season games, which is a month and a half.
Playoffs.
Yeah, or playoffs. So, you know, I guess.
You know, I kinda wonder, man, and I think it was something you said, that really sparked my interest. And I think when we read the comments or hear the comments and we're like, oh, that's all he called him. Like he's not yelling it at us. So, obviously we're coming from a different perspective, but, being American black, and I make that distinction because Mills is black, but he's from Australia and he has a Aboriginal heritage. But we're African American, so it's a little bit different. For us, because you already know what we're called, like all kind of things. So I guess our history and the things that we've been called, when we see something like this, we were like, oh, that's light. You know what I mean? It's like, dang, that's all he called him, Jamaican dog. Like, jeez. You know, so, but yeah, so, yeah, I had the same feeling, B. I'm like, man, that's all he said. And it just didn't seem like he really said anything, like, overtly offensive. Now, again, I'm not Patty Mills, so I don't know how he felt, and I'm not, you know, and you know, from where he's from, anything like that. So, like you said, B, I don't know how they feel being called that, but yeah, it just seemed very light to me when I read it. But anytime you insult anybody, I don't know. I don't mean to play insult Olympics here, but you know, they all hurt. But oh well. Yo, real quick, the Wizards 9-3 without Wall.
Mm-hmm.
We buried the Wizards on this show, FIFO.
We sure did. You know, I think that this is one of those situations where there might be turmoil in that locker room with Wall versus his teammates. At first, I didn't want to believe that, obviously, because John Wall is a great talent. But they're making an over effort to try to play well without him. And it feels intentional, not like obviously when you play the game of basketball, you're trying to win every game, but it almost seems like they're trying to make a point to John Wall, and, or maybe that's just how the media is kind of spinning it. But I feel that. And I don't think that is good at all. But it's interesting because John Wall still has like what, a couple years on his contract, correct?
I believe so. Yeah.
Or is he a free agent? Hold on, let me look that up because that is going to determine what I say next.
Let's see.
Give me 1 second. John Wall contracts.
I thought Basketball Ref would have it. Oh, no, that's just salary info.
So he signed, he has a contract extension through the 2023 season. So he has 5 years. I don't know if they're willing to trade him. I doubt that they trade him. So I don't know. I don't know how you fix the situation. Obviously Marcin Gortat had things to say. So he may or may not be gone. But, you know, who do you replace him with? Because when you look at that when you look at that roster, right, especially the starting five, Bradley Beal is a second tier level guard, right? Like, he's very good, but he's borderline all-star. I don't know if he's there yet consistently. John Wall is an all-star, right? Otto Porter is second or third tier small forward. Marcin Gortat is third tier big man. Markieff Morris, third, fourth tier, you know, wing player. Like, what other talent do they really have on this roster? You know, so maybe trading John Wall will be able to bring you back assets. I don't know, man. I think it's an interesting thing because if they truly believe that they're better without John Wall, I don't want to believe that for an entire season. Through a stretch, can they galvanize themselves and, you know, put their mind to it and try to, you know, work out some wins? Of course. But the basketball mind in me does not want to believe that they're better without John Wall.
Yeah. Yeah. Neither do I. But 9-3, I think, since he went down. And I'm trying to see, like, they beat, they haven't beat top tier talent. I mean, outside of Toronto, and they beat OKC. Everybody else has kind of been middle of the road. They lost to Philly, lost to Boston. So against some of the tougher teams, they haven't fared as well. But they beat Chicago, they beat the Knicks, Indiana, Orlando, and Atlanta, and so those are in there too. So like I said, two of their best wins were against OKC and Toronto. So, but yeah, I'm with you. They definitely are playing well. It'll be interesting to see how long they can keep this up without him. And I don't know if Santoransky will be able to maintain his level of performance. as the season progresses. So we'll see. So anyway, that's going to do it for us this week. As always, thank you guys for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a comment. Leave us a rating. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. We're working. Hopefully we'll have a studio soon, and we'll be able to bring you guys video content somewhere down the line in the future. So until then, we'll catch you guys next time. Peace.
Peace.